A diagnosis who changed his life overnight. A dream which never was too big, and a journey to himself which made him who he is today. Jump into episode 2022 of the Walkie Talkie Podcast and follow Brody on his journey around the obstacles of life.
How far can you travel?
Walkie Talkie Podcast is back, episode 2022, and I'm happy to have Brody today as my guest. And it's again the situation that I'm the guest because he invited me to record in his little cozy, I would call it a small studio here.
Mm-hmm.
Warm welcome, Brody. How are you today?
I'm good. Hi, everybody. Yeah, I'm doing well.
You're doing well?
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you to have me here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with, how are you in this current situation? How was your day? Like, how's your mood? How's your emotional?
Like right now?
Yeah.
To be honest, tired. I'm tired, but I feel uplifted. I feel like energetic. My body's sore, but I, like, it was a good day. Worked 10 hours, came home, and
is it
put usual, all myself together, and here we are.
Usual thing to work on a Saturday?
No. But I think just like with this, the time of year and summer and spring, longer days, work was there. I plan on going traveling in the future. So I'm working as much as I can in order to be able to.
What was probably the best day this year?
The best day this year, like 2023, like 15, a specific
15 degrees, no clouds.
Oh, like today. Oh, yeah. I probably look a little bit like I got sun kissed a bit.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was good.
I hope me too.
A little, yeah. You're a little more fair. You're like, you like red. I get like a little. I'm olive. Like in the summer, I go like a little bit darker. But it was a nice day. I remember. Probably the best part about my day was breaking and enjoying that. I was just like, I was working like right on the water, like a big project. And I just was like, oh man, like, I took my shoes off. I was like, put my bare feet in the dirt. And I was just like, stood there. I was like, oh fuck.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a good day.
We will go further in what you do. And for sure. I would like to start with, do you remember when we met?
Yes.
And maybe you want to tell me about it.
I think why we became friends is because we have a strong passion for football, soccer.
Yeah.
And we met on the field. And it was last summer, summer. It was last summer, 7-a-side at Hampton.
Right.
And I remember Gorge was trying to recruit you to coach, and they wanted to bring you to coach, and there is a new guy that was coming in to coach, and they say, hey, this guy's Jan, treat him well, we want him to coach here. And there's Jan. Hey, nice to meet you. And that's how we met. And then I guess our relationship cultivated through soccer. And then I think like a lot of my strong relationships are around the game,
right?
And that's good.
That's
how we met.
That's the big passion you have, right?
One of them.
I remember that well. I think it was I came late for the game, and I just jumped into the game.
Yeah,
and
you started the game.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You were like right. You were there right before kickoff.
Yeah,
so you kind of had a warm up, but you started.
Yeah,
you started. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun because I didn't knew anybody. Because I think I think Tony was the guy. But I never met him, right?
Yeah.
So he's a friend, was a good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
So
who's that?
Vicky from You Cool It.
Okay.
And she was giving me Tony's email number to connect.
Okay.
So, and he said, come blah, 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 blah.
Oh, and that's how.
Yeah.
I thought Gorge. But then Anton was telling us, like, oh, this guy.
That was the same time.
Okay,
So, and then Anton said, you can come for the game.
Uh-huh.
And it was the first time I met all of you. And I met Tony, which I had contact before.
For the first time there. And I think Dan may have been there. Cummings.
Yeah. He wasn't there, but
he was around.
Yeah, that was my contact. Yeah. Actually, it's funny because he's the reason why I went to the island.
Yeah, you were telling me.
Because he, I was in the Yukon and he, I had a phone call with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, okay, I have to coach soccer in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and I have to leave the Yukon for that because it's not gonna work.
Not if so, I have, like, this much snow.
Yeah, even if I met Neil already.
Yeah.
So and then he said, yeah, come to the island and I get you involved. And I was like, okay, I don't know this guy, but I just trust him and go. And so without telling me that, come down here and I involve you in soccer, I probably would not give it a try. So even if I never coached for Gorge so far, but he was the reason that I went down.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Another question I like to ask in the beginning.
Yeah.
Did you ever thought, or maybe you did not, what do you think about encounter things, life, persons, emotions, moments, can be everything.
Like my approach?
Yes.
So my approach to...
If you're aware of that, yeah.
Yeah. I like my approach to... Okay, so my approach to life, I guess, to describe it would be open. Mm-hmm. I'm not closed-minded. I was diagnosed with diabetes when I was 13, which was a big flip-flop of life. And it kind of... It taught me this at a young age that you're mortal and you're going to die. Like this inevitable, I think, like common human realization is like, oh, fuck. And I think when you're like a teenager or like in you're in your 20s, you don't necessarily think about death yet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like you're just like, fuck it. Like, right? And maybe it's like you're closed. There's like a closed mind to the inevitable reality of life that you're going to die.
Yeah.
And when I was 13, I was introduced to death, but I was had diagnosed with this disease that could kill me quite easily if I wasn't careful.
That's a pretty special encountering of something. Yeah.
And so I think it didn't happen right away, but because my approach to life derived from my diagnosis with diabetes of living it to the fullest and not worrying about the small things and being open to all experiences because it's like borrowed time for me. So if I was born 100 years ago, I wouldn't have lived past 13 years old.
Right.
So I like to put myself in that position of, like, I'm living borrowed time, so might as well enjoy it. Like, don't fret about the little things and live your life to the fullest and put yourself out there. And who cares, like, what people think? And and I think, obviously, I'm human. And so I feel stuff. Like, every human and you have conflict energy. But I just push through and keep on putting myself out there and just keep on trying new things and living like a layered life.
So you're you're encountering life because of having the diabetes is different than before.
Yeah.
I mean, probably you never thought about it before because you were just a child.
Yeah.
So the diagnosis of diabetes,
I think, has helped me
to encounter things.
Live life to the fullest and not care what people think. I'd struggled with self-confidence internally. I think everybody does.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? Insecurities and, you know, but I think just... tapping back into that space of, you know, we're all gonna die. I'm living borrowed time.
Yeah.
Living life to the fullest.
Yeah.
Tapping into that.
It's interesting because I often think like we need sometimes this moment of encounter a moment or a disease or something or fear to realize, hey, everything is fine. Until you die, so live it. right? Don't overthink too much. Mm-hmm. Don't hesitate too much. Mm-hmm. Like, live it, mm-hmm. right?
I gotta elaborate on that. I think the one word I use is like, I'm able, it's taught me to deal and process with the inevitable calamities of life. So like the inevitable like hardships, the human experiences,
yeah,
people dying, your friends leaving, breakups, failures, right? And yeah. And for me, it's, I've experienced a lot of those, but I just keep,
you use that as an
yeah.
experience for your next level.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this resilience that I have developed through the years, it wasn't always like this. Like yeah. I can internally feel this, and I think it has been projected. I think I projected that feeling in a way where it maybe came across as arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
And I had felt that where I think people, because I was just so forward about it, that I think it was misinterpreted as arrogance. And so through the time, through life,
yeah,
it's like fine tuning that approach where how I'm internally feeling,
yeah,
is projected and received by people of how I'm feeling. Yeah. And I think for me, it was just kind of like dialing it back a bit,
yeah,
not like talk, just, you know, just letting your actions and speak for itself, not trying to, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm doing this, even though I was doing that and accomplishing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think another reason of why my approach to life is like that is that I experienced failures in the game of soccer here, yeah. here in Victoria.
Yeah.
I always wanted to play pro. That was my goal. But I had this disease,
yeah.
that, you know, that I was still trying to figure out. Maybe I didn't make the best. Then also this, Victoria is small, mm-hmm. political. Mm-hmm. There's really had only been like one pathway to pro, to like not a lot of like laneways to pro. And so if you weren't in the laneway, you weren't being advertised, right? And right. so, but I was still, I'm gonna do it. I'm going and going and going. And it kind of sparked the failure of not making the teams here in town as a younger lad. It yeah. sparked my fucking fire under my ass to keep yeah. on going. And it's like, you know, like, I don't need it. I just need myself.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go, and went other places to go and try to live my dream.
We will have that. I think sure. this will follow us through the whole episode, this part.
Yeah.
Let's clarify a bit. The diagnosis of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So, my little knowledge about diabetes is like, to build energy, like we need glucose.
Mm-hmm.
So we need cells to provide the glucose into the system.
Mm-hmm.
But to put the glucose into the cells, we need insulin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have diabetes, you're producing less or nothing.
Depends what.
No yeah. insulin. So you kind of you can't build energy
yeah.
for your body, right?
Yeah, it's like that. So when you consume carbohydrates or sugar, glucose or sugar builds up in your bloodstream. So say your bloodstream.
Yeah.
And it wants to be removed from your bloodstream to be used as energy.
Right.
And the key is insulin.
Right.
And so for me, I don't produce any insulin. So
Not at all. You don't produce any key.
I don't produce any keys. Yeah. So the glucose in my blood has no keys to open the door and my body take it and use it as energy. So it just, here's the door, it'll just hit, and my blood sugar levels in my bloodstream will rise. And so that's type 1. And so I need to take artificial insulin to then the key to open the door, and then my body to
produce.
And so that's type one. Type two diabetes is that your body's still producing insulin, but you're becoming more resistant to your own insulin.
Okay.
So, and I can become resistant to artificial insulin, and actually has to do with your diet. Your diet and your exercise. So higher fat and no exercise, if you are living that kind of lifestyle, you're prone to develop type 2 diabetes, which is that have the keys, and some of the keys are working and some will get out.
Yeah.
But there's still some that are hitting the door and building up into your bloodstream.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so the management tool for type 2 diabetes is oral medication, compared to myself, where I take injections. So I take 4 to 5 injections a day, depending on how much I'm eating.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of the main difference between those two types. And there's pre-gestational diabetes is when women get diabetes when they become pregnant.
Mm-hmm. You talk about death.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about diabetes and having the diagnosis of that, like, there must be a connection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible you die on diabetes if you're not...
Oh, yeah. Totally.
What's the case?
What are the dangers of diabetes that I face? So immediately, the low blood sugar is the danger. So let's say I take too much insulin, or I miscalculate on my intake, and I go low, your brain uses sugar to function. And so I can slip into a diabetic coma, and then the next step would be death.
If you don't get out of it.
If I don't get out of it. And so I'm super thankful because I have my partner Samantha, who saves my life all the time.
Yeah.
Like 3 times last week, I had super low blood sugars in the middle of the night. I wear what's called a CGM that will push all the data of my blood sugar levels to my phone, as well as hers, and will alert us if I'm dropping. And so a couple times, or a number, like probably 20 times, I've not waken up to my alarm, and I wake up and I'm coming to, and I'm eating something. I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm unconsciously eating, and she's on the side of the bed feeding me food.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. Like, all the time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah. So the where it can be dangerous is when I'm going to bed. And so I like to eat around four hours before I go to bed, because the fast acting insulin that you take for your food lasts 4 hours.
Yeah.
And so it will wear off by bedtime. Then I know where my blood sugar is at, and I can gauge what I need to do. Do I need to take more insulin, or do I need to eat food? Compared to, let's say I get home at 10 o'clock, I eat a bunch of food, and I take insulin, and I go to sleep. It's a guessing game. It can be risky, because let's say I take too much insulin compared to my carbohydrate intake, I could slip off in the night.
So let's imagine that.
And that's
going to bed must be the scary part of your day.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
How was it in the beginning? Like, felt fear of, I don't want to go to bed, or?
Well, at the beginning, my parents would be waking up at like 2 a.m.
Without phones.
The technology, we didn't have it back then when I first got diagnosed. And so I would have my finger pricker. Yeah. So my dad or my mom would wake up when I was a teenager living at home. Hey, check your blood sugar. Okay. Check my blood sugar. And then if I'm high, take insulin. Or if I'm low. And it happens all the time that I would be low.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did you figure it out, or your parents or the doctor?
How did my diagnosis?
How was that? Like, you were 13, you said?
Yeah, I was 13.
Take us with you a bit in this.
Yeah, sure. So I was 13 years old, and I started experiencing like the typical diabetic symptoms of just peeing and drinking. And so when your blood sugar rises, your body's first reaction is to piss out all the sugar.
Right.
So I was just peeing, and just drinking, lost a bunch of weight. And it's like, holy fuck, like I was going pee 5 to 7 times a night at its worst. Like it was really bad. And so we were going to go on a family trip, and I was kind of like, hey, like this is like, something's going on here. Then I started Googling symptoms, and I remember like, holy fuck, and crying and like seeing like, oh, I think I'm diabetic. And I remember my dad's like, oh, I don't know, like it might not be.
Yeah.
Like trying to console me and make me feel better. But I knew like something was wrong. And so we were supposed to leave the following day. I remember it was December 16th. We had a flight on the 17th. Went into a walk-in clinic last minute before they closed, like half an hour before they closed. They tested my blood sugar. They're like, you need to go to the hospital.
Where was that?
In Langford.
Langford.
Yeah. Just like at a random walk-in clinic that was the closest by, because I remember we were like shopping.
Yeah.
We were like shopping because we were going to go out to Toronto. So we were buying winter clothes to go out. So went to the walk-in clinic. They tested my blood sugar, and then they said, you got to go to the hospital. Went to the hospital and then was diagnosed right there. And we couldn't go on the flight the next day. I had to wait till it was like a Friday. I had to wait the weekend until the following Monday to basically learn how to be diabetic.
Yeah.
And so I went to the hospital.
Did you understand what they said?
Like, yeah, I understood. And so.
Or was it like.
No, it's funny that you said that, because so my only experience with diabetes before being diagnosed is I had a classmate in kindergarten who had diabetes caught too late and died. And so the other side of diabetes is if your blood sugar is too high for a long time, and it can basically shut down your organs. So the initial danger is low. High is like, it's not good to, you're not going to die. Mm. But if you're constantly riding high all the time and you're having no insulin, your organs are going to shut down. And so I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Because that was my only knowledge of diabetes at that time was with Elijah. I remember like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. And so I went to the hospital, got sorted in my bed, and there was a dude who was my age beside me. They told me, oh, there's a young boy that also got diagnosed yesterday, and he's up there. I went up there, and it was someone that I knew, Ryan Dubney, that I had went to tennis camp with. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, hey, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Wild. And so I spent 3 days in the hospital learning how to be diabetic with my family, and then we packed up our stuff and went out east for Christmas with my mom's family out east. And I remember getting there, and within the first day I ran out of insulin, because I wasn't familiar that, oh shit, I need to buy insulin. And so we're there and we're like, where do we, like,
and it was new for your parents too.
New for everybody. Like within like a week.
Yeah.
So we're all trying to figure it out, and I have needles, and it was a big change for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not just me. And my parents were my parents became type 1 diabetic when I became type 1 diabetic, because I was only a teenager at the time. And so they had to learn everything and help keep me alive. It was heavy. It was like a big heavy change, and it impacted my life Because
that would be my question. How did it impact your daily life with school, not, with friends, and
not in a good way? Because it made me isolated, and from the very beginning, and it sucked. And I wish this, like, it happened, but I now reflecting on it, it kind of is like, okay, like, well, this makes sense. But it also, I'm glad it happened that way because it taught me independence and how to, like, be alone, right? I felt alone a lot of the time.
Which is a shitty feeling.
It is a shitty feeling, but in the end, it's like, if you can learn to be alone and, like, be happy and, like, you know, like, go deep. And but that took time and it didn't happen right away. But initially, I remember when I was in grade 8, I had classmates who were scared of needles. And so I didn't eat my lunch in the classroom. I ate my lunch in the hallway so I can take my shots. So I was automatically isolated from all my friend, like, teenagers, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how they are.
Yeah.
So automatically it's like odd duckling.
Yeah.
Right? And so that kind of, and that's what made me fucking the way that I am, is because I experienced just kind of feeling left out, not being included. And I had this reaction of what the fuck, and over time, and I competitiveness and sports, I don't know. So it just kind of, it shaped me for sure. And so to go back, how did I feel? I felt alone. I felt, isolated. And then it wasn't good because I then internalized my diabetes. I wasn't open about it. I wasn't open about it with my peers. I wasn't open about it, like, really with my coaches. And throughout my life, I just didn't really.
You were not open with it, right?
I just was closed off.
Yeah.
I just,
because you didn't know what the reaction would be.
Yeah, and I think reflecting on it now, I think it goes back to, you know, like, being in eighth grade. Hey, can you sit outside at your desk so you can take your shots? Right. So I felt,
the teacher?
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm not gonna sit
no.
Kind of, but I did.
I worked a lot in school. I was like, "That's, I don't like that."
No,
yeah,
no, and it didn't help. And then, like, through high school, instead of just being, like, open with my friends and taking my needles in front of everybody, I would go to my locker. I would sit down alone in the hallway, sit on the floor, back against the wall, and shoot up. Heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy.
And did you have, like who were the persons you shared it with? Like, just the family?
That I had diabetes? Mm-hmm.
Or, like, not that you had it, but, like, you, I mean, they knew in school that you have it. But
yeah, like, who did I connect with?
Yeah.
No one. Like, and that was the thing, is, like, there were outlets that you can go in groups, and I went to some, like, diabetic camps and stuff like that, but there wasn't anything that I really strongly affiliated with. There wasn't like specific sports stuff there. I just didn't,
because it's interesting, because I remember now when you talking about it, that we had kids, not in my class but in school, they had diabetes, and remembering now, like, they had this kind of special behavior of being alone often, and looking back now while you're talking, like, nobody explained it to us. Like, nobody really made the effort, like, hey, this person has this and this, and
this
would
is what
help.
They have to go through.
Yeah, this is what they have to go through, and it would be helpful if we do this and that. Like, no knowledge probably from the,
not enough
people as well, so they couldn't really transfer that to the other students. And it's just like, I mean, I was on the other side and I didn't knew what's happening with these persons,
but you can see that something was different.
I saw that something is different for sure. And now imagine, like, you are the person. It's not a good feeling. Did you how did you manage that,
the feeling?
I mean, you can get depressed, maybe you were,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, like, depressed. I didn't manage it well. I remember smoking a lot of weed in high school. Mm-hmm. I was just alone and turned to that and just kind of masked it and tried to just engage in the regular teenager stuff.
Yeah.
Even though it probably wasn't, well, I know it wasn't, it was worse, even more, it was worser. It was more worse, yeah. Right? It wasn't as, what's the adjective? Worser?
You asked the wrong person.
Worsen, right. Yeah, so. No, it was more bad.
Yeah.
It was.
Even worse
for yeah. myself to engage in, yeah. in partying, basically. Yeah. And so I was doing that, but then also sports.
That would be my question.
Yeah. Soccer. And so soccer. So that was my passion. And so I was kind of running on the fine line of like, going in a good direction and going in a bad direction. And I didn't know what I was going to do. My grades were shit. Mm. My high school grades were shit because I just was having mental, I would describe it as mental health, sure. Like
yeah, depression. Yeah, it comes with it, yeah.
Depression, yeah. feeling alone, smoking weed, all of that. And I remember it's kind of, the other kind of soccer saved me, basically sports saved me. And so I had a buddy who was going to go down to the States to go play soccer. He, long story short, pumped out a bunch of videos and he had one of the coaches from Washington come up and watch him. And I was playing on his team and the coach had asked him like, hey, is there any defenders on your team that you think can go to the next level, can yeah. play? I said, oh, you should watch that guy. And my friend came up to me. He's like, hey, Brody, this coach is right here watching. Play well.
How old were you?
18. Like, this is in high school, 17. So I was kind of in this time of where, like, I could go not the best. I wasn't making the best decisions. I was feeling alone and isolated and processing, you know, being a teenager.
Okay. Like playing soccer was like your freedom.
Yeah, I felt free. I felt like no worries. It was freedom. And so we both played really well and the coach signed us to go down to the States that day.
For a trial?
No. Like you're on the team if you mm-hmm. want to come. Okay, but my grades are shit. He's like, you just need to graduate. And so that like flipped me, dropped my bad decisions, focus down.
There's a goal.
Yes, there's a goal. And then I realized I'm so goal-oriented. And that was like my introduction to goal setting and how mm-hmm. to accomplish goals and what it takes to accomplish goals. And so I remember like my English grade was shit. I was failing English. I was failing math. I was failing planning because I just didn't go and didn't give a fuck and not in a bad way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I remember like studying so hard to pass everything. And I technically I didn't graduate. And I remember sitting down with the principal telling him like, hey, like I have this opportunity to go down to the States. And he was familiar. He's like, oh yeah, my son went and played in that league playing baseball, where he had a family member. I'm not too sure if it was son, but he was familiar with where I was going.
Right.
And he said, yeah, like you looked at all my grades, looked at all my final exams. And he's like, you're like, I was like right there. And he said, go, like, that's a big opportunity, go. And so took the opportunity and the rest kind of history, and then excelled in university, realized like, I'm not stupid, I just didn't try. And then when I applied myself, I surprised myself. And then it was just kind of like this stacking effect. And then it's like, okay, now I'm on the journey. I can engage in my dream for another.
What was your dream?
To become a pro soccer player.
Hmm. So you bought
like a type 1 diabetic professional soccer player.
Was it a...
That was that my, was... like, it was like a driving. It was like, fuck everybody.
I'm not a normal
professional. I'm not normal. I have so much more to deal with that no one, like, and I wasn't really open about it. So I had this internal drive of like,
yeah,
I wish I was more open about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I,
you think
I,
would help?
Yeah,
totally. Because I remember when we had a conversation a few weeks ago that you kept it secret for a long time.
Yeah,
in the sport.
Yeah,
and you grew up on the island. You always lived on the island until you were 18 and went to the States.
Yep.
So first time away from home,
mm-hmm.
with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? You had to take care of yourself.
I had to take care of myself. It was nerve-wracking for my parents.
Exactly.
Because I wasn't necessarily managing it well, because I was a teenager and dealing with being a teenager on top of managing a chronic disease.
Yeah.
And so it was hard. I wasn't really open with, like, my coaches knew that I was type 1 diabetic, but I wasn't open with, there wasn't like a continuous dialogue of like how I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and it sucked because I think it actually hurt me, because if I have a bad episode when I'm playing, I don't perform as well. And so I needed to be spot on with my spot on with my blood sugars in order to be able to compete and not, you know, appear like have a disability.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I didn't, throughout university, I like, my coaches knew, and I typically had a relationship with the athletic trainers, and that's who I had a stronger dialogue with, and I would talk to them about it, and they would be aware. Not really much the coach, because I was in super competitive programs, both schools that I went, and I didn't want to come across as like there was a reason not to start me.
Yeah.
So I wasn't communicative about it. And then when I started being more communicative about it is when I made the next jump to start trialing professionally. Then I was like, hey, like, I'm type 1 diabetic, and yeah, I was just straight up.
Where was that? When was that?
I went to Thailand first to go try to play pro. And so I actually hid it there because I couldn't, there's the language barrier.
Why did you end up in Thailand?
So I had a random connection through, this crazy story.
Because the thing is, I remember when I was young and I was a good soccer player, but never that talented that, I mean, you dream a bit about like, oh yeah, maybe I make a pro.
Yeah.
I never had this realistic thought because it was unrealistic. But sometimes when you are young, like, you just dream.
Yeah.
And I often had like this idea, where do I go to become a professional soccer player? Because Germany, Europe is the hardest place to become a professional soccer player.
Oh yeah.
So I often realized, oh, maybe I just go to Thailand or something.
Uh-huh.
Well, I would probably be the best soccer player in the country, and then I could immigrate, and then I could be a professional soccer player. Did you have these thoughts?
No, it's different. It was just looking for opportunities.
Yeah,
was just like looking for opportunities. It was the most random connection. I had a teammate who was from Kenya, Daniel Magumbi. Shout out to Daniel. Daniel had a friend named Peter who was in Thailand, who was also from Kenya. He was there playing pro. He was supposed to come to the school that I was coming to. That's what it was. So he was supposed to come to my school in Oklahoma, and he had reached out to me and started asking me questions about the school. This is the guy in Thailand who's friends with my teammate, and they're both from Kenya.
Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, like, what's up with the school, blah, 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 blah. And there was no talk about Thailand. And then conversation stopped, and then kept in touch, kind of, sort of, and then I saw he was in Thailand. I was like, hey, I just asked, like, what are you doing over there? He was like, oh, I'm doing this. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I said, like, what if I came over there and just, can I tap into your network? And he's like, yeah, you can come over here, stay at my place, use my agent, and
play.
And so I graduated in 2017. I went home and worked for a couple months, stacked some cash, booked a plane ticket to Thailand, and off I went. fucking crazy. So I got, yeah.
So fuck it.
Fuck it. I was like, I was so like, I didn't like, I just was like, okay, there it is. Like, I just graduated university.
Yeah.
I kind of, I was 23. I knew I had not a very large window, but I had a window to try to do something. Yeah. There was an opportunity there. There wasn't any opportunities that I thought were worth it in the United States still. Didn't really want to stay in the United States. Wanted something different. Wanted to have gained just more experience, because I've just, that's what I wanted. I wanted a full life and Thailand, and there was the opportunity, so off I went.
How did it go?
I went, it went interesting. So the first time
interesting I was there, is nice. That means there's a story behind.
Yeah. Oh, buddy, there's like seven, there's multiple stories behind it. So I get there in Thailand, and I'm staying in this little, it's like this big. Here's like a living.
What are you showing me? This, the listeners.
This is his living space. Okay. So his living. This is like the living room, and there would be like.
Is it 12 square meters?
Yeah. 10, yeah, it'd 10. Be like 10 by 10.
Yeah.
And then a kitchen that would be like 8 by 5, and then a bedroom, and there was myself, Peter, and then he had another guy from Cameroon named Diego, and him and I are still really good friends, and that's another story I can elaborate on. And then he had another guy come in like halfway through when I was there named Kalen, who he wanted to the same thing. We were all football players tapping in and to this agency, and they had their connection was a guy named David Bahia, who had was playing pro in Thailand at the time. So we used his agent. And so we had opportunities, and we went to multiple different trials. But what didn't really work out in our favor is that when we went there, it was like a 1 month transfer window. Mm-hmm. So it was like a mid season transfer window. And so not many clubs were looking for players, and they were specifically looking for players who are already playing in Thailand who can just go.
Yeah.
And so we got into with a club, all three of us, and then Peter got cut.
Do you remember the name of the club?
Yep. Pattaya FC.
Pattaya FC. Was it in Bangkok or what?
It was in Pattaya.
Pattaya.
Pattaya. And so Peter got cut, and then Diego and I were kept with Pattaya FC. And so they like, oh, we want to keep having a look at you. Okay, sounds good. Okay, we're going to arrange you some sleeping arrangements. Hey, sorry, we don't have your sleeping arrangement sorted right away. We can put you in here. And so where they put us was in a Thai boy orphanage that was right beside the field that was in a church. So it was like a church. It's like a Christian church that was a Thai boy orphanage that they like kind of, they housed a couple other players. And then, but the rooms were like shit. Like it was a big room. And a mattress maybe about yay thick, no air conditioning. In the corner of the room, it was collapsing. Like there was something living up there. There was a creature living up there. It was fuck. No refrigeration. So I had my insulin. And I need to keep my insulin cold. So Diego and I, daily, we had to do this only for 4 days, would have to, him and I would walk to 7-Eleven down the road every day to get fucking ice packs to bring back and to put my insulin on there. And
I getting insulin wasn't a problem
then? I had a big stack okay. of insulin. Mm-hmm. So I just had to keep it cold or it would expire. So Diego and I would fucking walk and get ice to keep my, and I remember him and I walking. He was like, man, like we're gonna look back at this when we're professional soccer players and be like, look where we came from.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now Diego is a full-on professional soccer player in the Ghanaian Premier League, and I'm here with you.
Yeah.
So we, like I was talking to him last week, like nice. He, and so we reflect, and he's...
That's a bond, huh?
That's, yeah, he's my, he's yeah. calls me my blood. He's like, yeah. he's like my brother.
Yeah.
Right? And so that was cool, and we have another story, I guess. We were like hanging out one day in the grass, and then all of a sudden a white dude like, oh, another, it's like a white dude comes up to Diego and I, and Diego's from Africa, and he just, and here am I, white dude, and he's like, what the, like, he just kind of like sees us and then walks up to us and he goes, hey, like, what are you guys doing here? And he was like a Brit, and he had like, he was on his dirt bike, and we had a moped at the time that we had access from another player. That's a crazy story. So we, he's like, oh, you want to come up? I just live up the road. You want to come hang out? We'll just spend some time. And we're both just kind of like, sure, I guess, like something to do. He seemed like nice enough. And, but we were both like, there was like something off with him, but it was, but he was fine.
Not enough to say no.
Yeah. Not enough to be like, this guy's going to murder us.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so we're like, okay. And off we went, and we get to his house, and it's when we get in there, then it's like, okay, this is kind of weird. And he had a Thai wife, and long story short, this guy owned, he had like factories in Thailand, and he was in Thailand for years. And then it was just kind of, his behavior started to get a little bit weird. And then all of a sudden he like opened up the chest like this, and then grabbed out like prescription pills. And he crushed up the prescription pills and he put it on a tin foil and he started smoking it. And I was like, we gotta fucking go. Later, man. So Diego and I get on the moped. It was like, it wasn't that fast. He's like, oh no, like, say, I'm like, I don't think this is the place for us. Like,
yeah.
we gotta go. Nice, nice. Nice meeting you.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks for inviting us. Exactly. So off we went, and I drove the moped to the place, and Diego's like, oh, can I drive back? I'm like, you sure, man? Like, I have experience driving mopeds or dirt bikes. He's like, hey, can I drive back? Sure, I guess. And so I get on, and instantly I'm like regretting it. And he's not the most stable, but it's like just up the road.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming in. Here's the orphanage or hot, whatever, our hotel. We turn right. He's coming in too quick. He hits gravel and he fucking wipes out this moped. I see that he's going down. I'm on the back. I jump on the back, land on my feet. I'm fine. But he goes down in gravel, fucks up his knee. So his trials were done.
Shit.
Because he fucked up his knee on... Yeah, on the gravel.
Yeah.
And so we were at the point where this club's like, yeah, we want to sign you. We just need your ITA. Oh, we're going to get
what's the ITA?
International Transfer Allowance. ITC, sorry. ITA is a different. That's for trades. ITC, International Transfer Clearance. And so it's like anybody that goes to a different country to go play, even if it's amateur, their federation has to allow. And so like, okay, we're going to get the ITC. But they didn't speak any English, the club, like little to none. And so all the communication was being done through our agent. So we would be kind of talking to our agent. They would be talking to representatives. And so there wasn't really like a continuous dialogue of like, what the fuck was going on? They said, we're just waiting for your ITC. I keep on calling Canada Soccer. Hey, like, have you guys received this ITC request? No. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then the window for signing was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And then, so on this is another fucking crazy part of the story, is that, so when they found us our place to stay, there was a guy on the team already who is signed playing there that I played soccer with in Washington State at my first school, who was just randomly over in Thailand playing pro. Completely different.
No connection
to how I ended up there.
Yeah.
Completely different. So then there was that. And so I had a friend there. And so I was with Dauda, and he's from Gambia, but he's American. So I was with Dauda and Diego, whose name's Albert Ionde, but he goes by Diego. So we're like fucking there. And then it gets to a point where it's clear that the ITC didn't go through.
Yeah.
The window closed. Okay, I think it's time for me to go home and restart.
And what did you learn from that experience? Looking back, like being in America in a school, like having the chance, okay, go to Thailand, give it a try over there, just fuck it, go there, have an experience.
Yeah.
Living in a completely different country.
Yeah.
Having all this experience, like living in a shitty conditions and stuff.
Yeah.
Language try to barrier. Survive with diabetes still.
Yeah.
What did you take out of it?
More resilience.
Yeah.
A better understanding of life and just a way of life. It's like an introduction to a different way of life. And Thai people are super happy.
Yeah.
Like they're just, they're like happy people, but they don't have a lot of money. Like the majority of the population is quite poor, but they had a really beautiful outlook.
Yeah.
It appeared on life. And so it was kind of like, I picked up that and learning to live with very little.
Yeah.
And being completely content with very, very little. So I guess, what did I pull out of that? I guess I would, I gained a lot of perspective. I gained,
yeah,
for sure, like just perspective on life compared, yeah, like we come from, we're in a Western society where, you know, like more. I need the, yeah, next best thing.
Yeah.
Right. I need to fancy. I need to look this way. This image that we think we need to create in order to be accepted.
Yeah.
I gained a perspective on like that's just.
Yeah, get what the others have. Like doing always.
Yeah, that. It's, yeah, like keeping up with the Joneses. Exactly. Have you heard that phrase? Yeah.
No, but.
Yeah, keeping, yeah, up with the next. Yeah, and so I learned, and I was already kind of at that point coming into myself. I was 23. I was already on my unique journey. I was really starting to like root into my unique journey and not worry about trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
And
so, live your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Live my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you aware of that when you were there? Did you
like my change, my shift in perspective?
Mm-hmm. Well, it came later when you looked.
No, back, I could feel it happening. Because I was just like, oh, this is fucking cool.
Intense.
This is intense. Yeah. Like, it's like, because there's many other stories of my journeys through Thailand. It's just like, yeah, really cool. Yeah. It was cool. It was cool. Yeah.
So Thailand was done. Like,
nope. And so I went home.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked.
Was Victoria?
Victoria. So I came home to Victoria, worked, and I was continuing my apprenticeship. So anytime that I was home, I was building houses with my dad and developing that other part of my life, like layering my life. My parents were like, you know, like, yes, we support you on your professional pursuit in soccer, but I think you should layer your life, go to school, get a degree, and finish that and then go pursue it, because then you can fall back onto that, learn a trade, learn a skill set, and then you can like, mm-hmm, diversify your life, because they've seen other examples, or I've seen other examples of people just like, I'm going to be this and only doing that, and then if it didn't work out, yeah, then what?
You can,
and then you're
you
having
can fall very deep, yeah,
fall and having like this like exponential, like just like a crisis, like, mm-hmm, you had like an identity crisis.
Yeah,
well, I'll use soccer as an example. I've seen so many people that are like, just go play pro.
Yeah,
and then it didn't turn out, and then they're like,
yeah,
what the fuck? I'm 28 years old.
Mm.
What I'm gonna go back to school, and so then you go back to school, and then you're 32 when you finish, and trying to basically restart your life, and so. The way that my father described it to me is like, bro, you can walk, or you can chew gum and walk at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Oh, that wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I like that. You can chew and walk at the same time.
Yeah, chew gum and walk at the same time.
Yeah. And so, think while you chew.
Yeah, exactly. Try to. And so that's what he said. Yeah, you go play soccer. You can continue your dream and chew your gum and go to school.
Nice. I like that.
And get a trade and build a skill set, yeah, but still play. So that's what I did. And I went home, gathered up some more cash, bought another ticket to Thailand because I saw opportunity there, because there was opportunity there. But I wanted to go at the beginning of the season because there would be more clubs open.
Yeah.
And so I went home, stacked some cash, went back to the beginning of the season and had used the same agent and had way more tryouts and got signed. I signed a one-year professional contract sitting at the table like this. Boom, boom, boom. Four copies of the contract. I think I talked to you about this when at the field. It was fucked. So I spent the whole preseason there. Really good rapport with the coaches. Played really, really well. Like, I feel like this is it. Like, it's going to happen. And I remember I was sitting, I was roommating with a guy named Kim from Korea. And he came in. He's like, hey, Brody, they're downstairs waiting for you. Oh, okay. So I went downstairs and it was the woman who was the administrative assistant for the club. And the club was called Rayong FC. And so where I was, well, I guess it's a podcast, but I was on Pattaya is, say this is the Gulf, here's the ocean.
Yeah.
Pattaya is east of Bangkok, down the coast.
Yeah.
And then Rayong is even further. And so I just continued down the coast. I was using Pattaya as my hub because I was familiar with the city because I had been there. So anyway, blah, blah, blah. And went down and was face-to-face with their administrative assistant who did all the corresponding with the foreigners because she spoke the best English. And so she was there. Okay, here's the contract. And I had no contact with my agent. She didn't let me know. I call her and I say, hey, like, this is happening. Did you know about this? She's like, yeah, it's all good. Sign. Perfect. One, two, three, four. And so what's supposed to happen is they take two, I take two.
Yeah.
But there was no signature on from the club.
Yeah.
And so what was told to me is that the president of the club is out of town right now and I need to take all four to allow him to sign it and then we can go forward.
Then you get two back.
And I didn't get two back.
No, but they was there.
Yeah, so they took all four. And here I am. I did it. I'm a fucking professional soccer player. Holy fuck, I remember I was in the pool. I was like almost in tears. I was just like, oh my God, all that hard work finally paid off. And then a week later, on Christmas Day, they don't celebrate Christmas in Thailand. They're Buddhist, pretty much. I get the same, hey, Brody, they're downstairs. What
the heck? And waiting for you.
Waiting for you. And it was the woman, and she looked like awkward. And then there was a Brazilian guy named James who was... had good relationships with that woman because he was playing for the club and they had a business on the side, blah, blah, blah. And he was there they were explaining to me like, sorry, like they didn't go through on the contract. So my Christmas present in 2017 was, here you go, you're a professional soccer player. Sorry.
So what happened?
At that point, the window was closed. The signing window was closed. All the clubs, like I spent all my time doing the preseason with that club. All the clubs did their preseason and like any professional. So I was left hung out to dry.
So like it the paperwork didn't.
No, because they didn't sign. And my agent's like, what's happening? What's going on? It was the weirdest thing.
What's then?
That was it.
Like, looking back, do you think like, was it naive to sign without not knowing what's actually happening?
I don't think it was naive. Like, I trusted my agent.
Yeah.
And I didn't just sign. I followed through and did my due diligence. Like, hey, like, is this all good to go? And yeah. And so what happened was, at the time I was seeing a woman from Victoria and she traveled the world when I went to Thailand. She went the opposite way. She went through Europe to Australia and then met me in Thailand. And so she was in and around when I was at the club.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my own room and she was coming in and out. And I think some of the players, the Thai players who were rooming with one or two other guys, expressed that they weren't happy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so that was the only thing that I could think that would...
Yeah, maybe change their mind.
Change their mind because they didn't want conflict within the club.
Yeah.
And obviously there was enough... I guess this is an assumption, obviously. Yeah, yeah, there's enough uproar or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was...
So that was a pretty...
heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking Christmas present.
Yeah. It's fucked. How did I feel?
Yeah.
Sad, man. Like...
What did you do? Another situation, and like it probably felt like I've been here before. Fuck it, why I'm again here, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I was just like, okay, well, what's next? So I stayed. I extended my stay. I rented out another place. I had extra money. I was like, I'm not gonna just go. Might as well enjoy my time here. I had tapped into a network that I had, someone who I had met on the Pattaya FC for my first trip. His name's Donald and he's from the Ivory Coast, and I tapped into that network and I said, hey, what are you doing? Are you playing? And he was living there. He's like, yeah, I'm doing this. And he was training with All Sports Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fucked. And it was this big compound of like luxury homes. And in the middle was like a sand soccer court, two octagons, one boxing ring, like 50 squat racks, 100 bikes, full like open concept gym, pool, masseuse, grass field. And I got there, I'm like, what the heck? Or like, what is this? And he's just like training there. And it was connected to dirty money.
Yeah.
Mob money. Russian mob money. And there is a Russian soccer player that I think one of his relatives had some coin and they invested in this sports academy. So I started playing there and training there. And just because were an agency and they were like, oh yeah, we'll send you to Turkey or Latvia. And I was just like, sure. Fuck it,
yeah.
I'm here.
What's next? Nothing to lose.
I'll show you pictures of the compound. I have a few. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, so I did that. And this is another wild part of this journey. So there was a coach. He's from Cameroon that was there. And he was a coach. And he was working with these Russian Latvian guys. His name was Brian, and Brian played in Russia. And he's like, oh yeah, I played here, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, Russia. And have you met Eddie Mukahanana here?
No.
He's a soccer coach. He's from Zimbabwe.
Maybe I met him without knowing his name.
Maybe you met him without knowing. So anyway, so I knew that Eddie had played in Russia. So I found out what club Eddie had played for. And I found out that it was the same team as this guy, Brian. Fucking from Cameroon in Thailand.
Yeah.
And I just randomly ended up there. And I said, hey, do you know this guy? And I showed him a picture of Eddie. And he goes, yeah, I know. I played with him. I played against him.
In Russia,
in the Russia Premier League.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in this car and I'm trying to, is this guy like fucking bullshitting me? And then long story short, I came back to Victoria and I said, I went up to Eddie and I said, hey, Eddie, do you know this guy? And he goes, yeah, I played against him in Russia. And it was just like a wild sub-story of life.
Of how small the world is, how connected the world is.
Yeah.
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 And so I was playing every day. I was playing in the streets. I would go to like small sided games, just like in the city.
Yeah.
And would just like, hey, can I play? Yeah, sure. And just play with different groups of Thai people. And then there was lots of Russians there and some like Dutch guys.
Having
and
a good time.
Just having a good time and playing and training and looking for opportunity and.
And still on insulin.
Yeah.
Whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting used to that.
Well, I got. Yeah. I mean, at that point, I was 10 years into being diabetic. I was pretty. Yeah. And then a full collegiate playing career. So how does it dial in?
How does it impact your traveling by yourself?
Like dealing with customs and stuff?
Yeah. Or, like in general? Like.
It's easy. Like, I don't have any issues because it's a common disease.
Yeah.
And so they just go, come on through. Like, I'll get checked, but they just see that. I just tell them, hey, I'm diabetic and I have needles in my bed. Okay.
Yeah.
Never really had any issues.
But you, like, being on your own is, like, a different story, right? Like,
yeah.
Listening what your girlfriend is
yeah.
doing
so,
at night. So.
So what I had to do is I had to do that myself. So I would make sure that I was, like, really diligent of when I took my insulin, when I went to bed. And if I took insulin later on, I would set an alarm for 2 or 3 in the morning to wake up and make sure that I'm alive.
yeah. So Tyler was done. You closed this chapter.
I closed the chapter.
Went back to Victoria.
Went back to Victoria.
To home.
To home. And worked. So I went back and I wasn't done yet.
Yeah.
Because at that point I was 23, 24. I was like, okay. And at that point I said, okay, I'm going to give it till I'm 28. And then when I'm 28, I'm going to stop pursuing and then transition into my career, carpentry. And that's what I said. I was like, okay, I'm going to go. And that's what I was doing. I was going to go and finish my Red Seal and do that when I was done.
Yeah.
So I came home, worked, stacked up money again, then hit the internet. Professional soccer trials. Found a list, went down to a combine in LA through PSC. I think it's Professional Soccer Combine. And it's just like a agency company that they host ID camps and they bring in coaches from all over the States and Europe.
Yeah.
So I went down into California, just outside of LA, did a 3-day combine, got seen, then got invited to go to Spain. Said, hey, do you want to go to Spain on a pro trial with us? Sure. But when I was at this trial, I was playing with a broken wrist and was going to have wrist surgery in like 2 weeks after that trial. And so I had asked my doctors before, like, hey, I have this trial. Like, am I able to go and play before the surgery? Like, what's the risk? And they're like, it's broken. Like, just tape it up. And if you're okay, you're okay. So I did. But I told them, like, hey, I'm not going to be. It was in March. This was
you're
like,
a defender. So
yeah.
It has an impact if you have a broken wrist.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I guess. So I did it and played well and got invited to go to Spain in March. But I said, hey, I'm not going to be ready because I won't be able to train fully because I'm going to be recovering from surgery and money. And I didn't have cash flow because I was working as a carpenter. So I had to go and find another. I went and walked off the street into an office and had a business degree and said, hey, I haven't worked in an office before. I have a business degree. This is what I'm doing. Okay, you're hired.
What?
Yeah, as a, like an office assistant.
Yeah.
At a real estate appraisal company.
Yeah.
So I worked there, stacked cash. And so the company, going back to the soccer, the company had extended the invitation to go to Sweden and Finland in August.
instead of Spain.
Right.
And I said, okay, I can do that. And so same thing, stacked my cash. And then August came around and off I went to Sweden.
And, where in Sweden?
Boden. So it's like northern Sweden, like about 20 miles from the Finnish-Sweden border.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was up there, Boden's BK.
BK is the...
Boden's BK. Yeah, Boden's BK right here.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
Boden's BK. Funny.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was... Yeah. So I went there and went on trial. And so we played those guys. We played another Luleå FC because we were sailing Luleå, which was close to Boden's. So I had multiple different games. First game, I play like the best fucking football. I was like so dialed.
Was the broken wrist?
No, I was surgically repaired, yeah. Good to go. I was good to go. So I had accumulated all my experience, my university, my Thailand. I was fucking like
focused.
I was ready for it. I was just like ready to just grab it. Played lights out. Got knocked out in the game, the first game. I'll find it for you, I'll show you the footage. And it's crazy. I remember their right wing, I was playing left inside center back. Our fullback or our holding mid played it to our left back, but he just like played it into no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
And I was here. And their right winger's coming like this. I'm coming across like this. I go in 2 feet. I get all ball, but he comes across and his knee hits my head. Boom. Blood. I go down. I instantly know something. Like I just got my bell rung like hard. I instantly know I'm concussed, but I know that I'm playing so fucking well. I'm not going to show anything. So I get up. And I'm going, oh, fuck. And I'm like walking away. I'm going, oh, fuck. And my nose bleeding. I'm just like, oh, fuck. And then that was probably like the 65th minute. Finished the game. I remember the coaches coming up to me going like, holy fuck, like good game. Because this was the first game. And like we just met some of these coaches. So they didn't really know who we were. And so they're coming up to me like, good fucking game. I'm like, thanks.
Where am I?
Yeah.
Is it Thailand?
Yeah. Like, yeah, man. And I was just like, oh, no, like, not again. Like, fuck me. And so, yeah. And then I shouldn't have done it, but I kept playing. And I played another game, and I could feel it. And I had the ball, and I was like, oh, fuck. And then I played one more after that. And halfway through, I remember going to clear the ball. I have it on film too, go to clear the ball right off the top of my head, and it was just, and I had to go down. And then the night after that, we were in Finland, and I was around the toilet throwing up in Finland. So
you had a really concussion.
Yeah, I was concussed bad.
Yeah.
And then I had an opportunity to stay in Sweden after I was invited to stay. But I couldn't stay because I was concussed, so I couldn't play. So I had to go home, and this was 2019, and I was getting set to go back to Sweden to go tap into that network again, filled out my Swedish visa application, submitted my Swedish visa application, and then COVID.
Corona
shut down the entire planet. And that was the end of my professional journey.
Worldwide tryout, professional playing journey.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, funny. One highlight, going back to Thailand, I got to play in a friendly international beach soccer tournament on the Latvian national beach soccer team.
So you played for the Latvian national team?
Yeah.
In beach soccer. Was the Canadian citizenship.
The Canadian citizenship. There was other internationals on the team. They were allowed to have because it was just a friendly.
Yeah. What's, like, talking about the highlights.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably hard to find the highlight of all these
Oh, man.
Experiences and stories. But what is this thing you will, what comes up first when I ask, like, what's the highlight of all these? All the journeys, what's the highlight? Bad or good, whatever.
Like, that's a good question. I don't know. I think it's like, it's not like a specific, it's more like a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Of just, it's even like better. It's like a feeling of accomplishment, even though I didn't accomplish what I was setting out to do. That I it was like a strong life lesson of like, keep fighting, don't give up, resilience, learning about myself.
Yeah.
And this combination of already having diabetes, kind of knowing how to deal with calamities, and then going through the fucking shit storm of trying to become a professional soccer player, and then receiving energy here because I wasn't engaging in the pathway here. I was engaging in another pathway, and then I would try to come back here and tap into this pathway after all this experiences, and then not be giving the opportunities in the pathways here, even though I've grown my CV like 6 years later from the same feeling when I was 18 trying to make it into these pathways of pro.
Yeah.
And now coming back, it's like, oh, it's like a no-brainer. I have like all this experiences, even more so than some of the players that are on this team, and not even like, it's just like the same kind of biased.
Yeah.
And it's just like, fuck me, man. And it's just like, it's frustrating. Yeah. But I understand it. It's like political and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But what did I gain? What was like my favorite experience of all that? I think, yeah, just the lessons, the life lessons.
The life lessons, huh?
It's just the life lessons. Yeah. And learning how to like gauge, learning how to like engage with people.
Yeah.
And learning how to like talk with
It's interesting.
So many different people.
It's interesting because when I listen to you, like all these stories of like soccer, coached you much more than soccer in itself, right? Like
100%.
What you took out of it is like, it has to, is the part of soccer, but it's not about soccer.
Yeah,
like it's about life. It's about
the power
people.
It's the power of sports.
Exactly.
It's the power of sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is great to hear.
Yeah.
Did you ever like, how was the, on the journey, the, did you ever met people with diabetes, or was it completely your own world? Like, was that like you had your insulin, you did it by yourself, some people knew, did you ever met someone who would, could you share it?
Yeah, there's a funny story with that, actually.
Why I'm asking is because when we were standing on the field a few weeks ago and watched the cup game of your team, we talked a bit about your life and a lot of stuff, and randomly at the end of this conversation comes a guy over and says like, hey, I heard your conversation. I'm type 1 too.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, oh, wow. That's, I mean, there must be a community.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is.
Yeah. And I was curious, like, how's that when you travel around the world, like you?
There wasn't, not many.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was only one in the football world, and it was in Oklahoma, and it was near the end of my stay at Oklahoma. Yeah, it was by last year, near the end. And one of my teammates got diagnosed. He was from Scotland, Harry Donaldson. Shout out to Harry. He got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in Oklahoma. And he was my neighbor at the inner dorms.
Mm.
And so I had to go.
You could help him a lot.
Yeah. And so I was his guide. I was his teacher. And so that actually sparked another kind of avenue in myself of helping other people with diabetes, and using the experience, all the experiences that I've experienced, to help mentor, advise youth and younger people, or anybody with the disease.
I think that's just, it's a small amount of people who have, like if you have diabetes, it's just a small amount.
It's a smaller percent,
It's like 8-9% something?
Yeah, smaller.
Something.
Yeah. I'm not too sure, but it's not a large number for type 1. It's smaller than type 2 and all the other ones, for sure. Type 2 is like the more common one, because it's more due to your like diet and lifestyle, and people can develop it if they just have a poor lifestyle. Type 1 is like an autoimmune disease that you can get it through like a virus or hereditary or blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
How is the... I have still so many questions. Like looking to your current life now, like you're in Victoria, back in Victoria, close to your family, playing soccer still. Is it right? You have your own podcast. You started a podcast about diabetes.
Yeah, I did 4 or 5 episodes. I did another podcast with my really close friend that wasn't about diabetes. That we did 20 episodes or 19 episodes, and the other one was with someone that I had came across through his son had, had been diagnosed with diabetes, and he started a nonprofit called Diasport, and which is basically they wanted to host sports camps for youth, but unfortunately it got shut down because of COVID. And so it was starting, it had traction, it was growing. We started doing these podcasts and engaging in this. It was called Behind the Pump, and we wanted to specifically talk with diabetic athletes, and I went all over the internet. He had some connections too, trying to find people, type 1 diabetic athletes to speak to.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you still think you want to continue that?
I do. I do want to continue it. I think I would continue that. I think I would do it alone. If I did it, like I loved what we were doing. I liked the guy that we were doing it, but it just wasn't a natural jive.
Right.
It wasn't a natural jive, and I wasn't getting the feeling that I wanted to feel when I would be engaging with something like that. I didn't have the spark.
Yeah.
But I'm super passionate about philanthropic work within the diabetes community, and I want to engage with that. I want to mentor kids. I want to see if there must be other type 1 diabetic kids that are playing soccer. Kind of the next path for me down that is to engage with clubs and be like, hey, do you want to reach out to any type 1 diabetic kids, and I want to host a camp, and then just be a public figure. I don't want to use that word, but just someone that they can learn from. Sure. Yeah. Just like a mentor.
A mentor, yeah. Yeah. It's funny because you answered the question I didn't ask.
What's that?
Like, I had in mind to ask you, like, how would your future look like connecting to diabetes? How would you continue your life with that, and how would it be impact?
I think
was having that and
yeah,
helping others, which you answered without asking.
Something. Yeah, yeah. And I think another playing building off that is the reason why I still play. One of the reasons why I still play is because I love it, but also just being an example of resilience for people with type 1 diabetes, that you can continue to play high level sports while having type 1 diabetes. And then for kids to be able to look at whoever, to see someone that's capable of still playing at a high level or even playing in general.
Yeah.
To see that, be like, oh yeah, like I can do that.
Did you had someone where you were looking up?
No.
It's funny because what you said in the beginning is, I want to be the guy.
Yeah.
Who made it with diabetes.
Yeah. It was me.
Yeah. And actually, you kind of achieved it, even if it's not the professional career.
Mm-hmm.
But you're on the way to keep continuing playing with diabetes 1.
Totally.
And help others with that.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's probably
that what you were looking for when you started this journey.
Absolutely. It's to be an example. To be a positive example.
Yeah, that's great.
And to write that story and that's like a big driving. It's like a big internal driving force for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy. And imagine like a 7-year-old kid and their parents are freaked out. They're having to, jab their kid.
Yeah.
4 or 5 times a day. And like even just for the parents, right?
I thought a lot about your parents.
Yeah.
While you were talking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Must be a, it's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job.
To keep your kid alive.
Yeah. Keeping your kid alive and then being, I'm super fortunate that they didn't just say no. No, we're, you can't do that. It's too dangerous for you.
Yeah.
So they were, okay.
Yeah.
They had the bravery. They had the bravery to be like, we're not going to restrict this guy from living a full life and going to chase his dreams. We're going to support him fully to go after it, which is petrifying for them. And I've had conversations like any time that I left, it was so super scary for my.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. For both of them.
Yeah. What's your dream?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
What's my dream right now?
For the future.
For the future? Continuing to live a full, continuing to live a full diverse life, and lifelong learning. That's my dream.
Yeah.
And I think it's an easy one to accomplish, but there can be challenges along the way that I think will, you know, develop you as a person as a whole. You know what I'm saying? Like it's easy to do because you just need to do it, like whatever it is, just keep on learning, but it's not always easy.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget sometimes.
Yeah, totally.
To not be aware of it.
Totally.
Last quote for the people out there. We nailed it.
Yeah,
we nail it.
It's like an hour and a half. We were talking like 50
it will
minutes.
It will be shorter, but
yeah,
doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. Exactly.
It was beautiful listening to you and talking with you. What's closest episode was a beautiful quote you like from your experience in your life, with all the stories you have, and this is just a few we heard so far.
Mm-hmm.
A quote. Don't have to be a quote, just something we
so, a closing remark. It's a good question.
Take your time.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be cliche. I don't want to be cliche. I'm gonna open it up with don't be afraid. Fuck it. Don't be afraid. Fuck it.
Don't be afraid. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Go for it.
Go for it.
Just go for it.
Thanks, Brody. Thank you very much. And it was great talking to you.
Likewise.
How far can you travel to a point of no return? It's a tiny little substance. Turn it into something new.